You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll send a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, 'cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America, the best idea since democracy.
The Little Red Hen. The little red hen lived on a big farm with all kinds of animals. One day, while she was walking, the little red hen came across some seeds. She decided to plant them. "Who will help me?" she asked her friends.
"Not I," said the bull.
"Not I," said the mouse.
"Not I," said the dog.
"Then I'll do it," said the little red hen. And so she planted all of the seeds by herself. It took a while, but the seeds grew into a field of wheat. "Who will help me cut the wheat?" asked the little red hen.
"Not I," quacked the duck.
"Not I," meowed the cat.
"Not I," brayed the bull.
The little red hen sighed and said, "Then I'll do it." And she cut the wheat all by herself. After cutting all the wheat, the little red hen just wanted to rest. But her work wasn't done yet. "Who will help me take the wheat to the mill to be ground into flour?" she asked.
"Not I," squeaked the mouse.
"Not I," barked the dog.
"Not I," quacked the duck.
"Then I'll do it," said the little red hen, and she took the wheat to be ground, and then she carried the heavy sack of flour all the way back to the farm. The exhausted little red hen then asked her friends, "Who will help me bake the bread?"
"Not I," said the cat.
"Not I," said the bull.
"Not I," said the dog. The little red hen said, "Then I guess I'll bake it myself." Once the bread was finished, the little red hen asked, "Who will help me eat this bread?"
"We will," said the duck and the dog.
"Us too," said the bull and the cat.
"And don't forget me," said the mouse.
"Nope," said the little red hen. "This bread is for those who worked on it." And then she relaxed and enjoyed all of her hard work.
Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and children of all ages, to the Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, brought to you exclusively every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time right here on RadioAryan.com. This week we've got a lot to talk about, so let's jump right in. We're going to be discussing the FISA warrant and the resulting move to hashtag release the memo, a little red hen analogy, a discussion of the February the 17th Shieldwall Network meeting coming up, a report from the killer flu right here in Arkansas, which is ravaging the countryside like a zombie apocalypse, a discussion of how DACA will affect the midterm elections and how they will, in turn, affect the future balkanization of Congress and the United States of America, the regionalism rising. We're also going to talk about the Schumer shutdown and Richard Spencer and his child porn gaffe. But first, we need to talk about what happened today in Knoxville, Tennessee. The Traditionalist Worker Party and the League of the South and the Shield Wall Network held an anti-infanticide rally in Knoxville, Tennessee today. The February 21st rally was a counter-protest against the Women's March, which was kind of a latecomer after most of the places around the country that had these pink pussy hat marches actually had them yesterday. Las Vegas and Knoxville, for some bizarre reason, I guess, in keeping with the tradition of having it the same date as last year, had it today. Once women get started on their schedule, you know, it's just hard to get them off, whether it's every 28 days or every 365. But in any event, they held this Women's March in Knoxville, which was an anti-Trump rally, a pro-illegal immigration rally, a Black Lives Matter rally, all rolled into one. But basically, it was an anti-white heterosexual male rally, and it was, above all, a pro-abortion rally. And that's why I call the white nationalist and patriotic response to it the anti-infanticide rally. Because, in my view, life begins at conception. And since we know now, because of medical science and technology always improving, a fetus can be viable. A baby can live outside the womb at a much shorter gestation rate. In other words, much earlier in terms of its life after conception than we ever would have thought possible previously. That means that whether it is at the 9th month or the 8th or the 7th or the 6th or the 5th or the 4th, abortion is murder. It is killing. It is taking an unborn life. Now, whether or not that is justified or not, from my perspective, being a purity spiraler, would depend on whether or not that life is the life of a healthy white baby. If it is a healthy white baby, then it is unjustified, premeditated, cold-blooded murder. Now, if it is a non-white baby, that's just good negative eugenics. And negative eugenics can be a good thing, just as positive eugenics are a good thing. The difference is positive eugenics are using the carrot, negative eugenics are using the stick, so to speak. Positive eugenics would reward whites, especially high-quality, genetically fruitful whites, for having more children. Negative eugenics would reward or punish non-whites or low-quality whites from having children at all through a system of fines or punishment or, in this case, terminating the life of the unborn non-white or low-quality white child. That's what eugenics is as a science. And as harsh as it may sound, as brutal as it may sound, it's in the best interest of our species to practice eugenics. But in any case, whenever it is a healthy white child, abortion is never justified. In my view, there are a lot of white families who would be happy to adopt a healthy white child and to give them a good life. So, when the Traditionalist Worker Party and the Shield Wall Network and the League of the South joined together in Knoxville, Tennessee today for their anti-infanticide rally, it was in opposition to the Women's March. The pussy hat wearers who were supposed to have been opposed by the March for Life, the Rally for Life, which was a group of primarily evangelical Christian women and a few token beta guys following their wives around. And then I think one Congress critter showed up from the religious right to speak to them. But they were so adamant about cucking and virtue signaling how they were not racist and actually opposing racist white nationalist, that they literally, with the cooperation, actually with the direction of the Knoxville Police Department, left the rally area that they were supposed to have been in and the Rally for Life, which was supposed to have been the mainstream, you know, loyal opposition to the Women's March, left the outside rally and went inside to the Knoxville Convention Center and held their little meeting there. Now, the TWP and the Chilliwack Network and the League of the South contingent had about 20 people present. And that's about the same size, if you'll remember, a couple of weeks ago, which the Chilliwack Network brought to Memphis for our rally for Forrest. But regardless of the size of the contingent, we have to bear in mind that there are certain very strict criteria that we can use as standards to judge whether or not any rally or protest or demonstration is a success or not, whether or not it's a victory. And those criteria are, very simply, if we leave with the same number that we went in with, if, in other words, none of our people are arrested, none of our people are injured, and if we are able to use the white power jiu-jitsu method of speaking truth to power, using the controlled media to get our message out, in or out of context, to our people, then by every measurable standard, that's a victory. So just as our victorious and successful rally for Forrest 2 weeks ago was a great victory in Memphis, today was a great victory in Knoxville, Tennessee, for the TWP and for the League of the South and the Chilliwack Network Patriots, who stood together against infanticide. And I had an opportunity, I guess, an hour before the rally began, I was in communication with Matt Heimbach and with the Tennessee state leader of the TWP as they organized last-minute security. I was letting them know that one of their rendezvous points had been leaked and the Antifa were talking about it. And then I was giving them live feeds after that, that the police were not going to allow shields in the rally area. And then I spoke on the phone right after the rally was over with an Arkansas Chilliwack Network Phalanx member who was present there as part of the Phalanx contingent of Patriots who were there with the TWP and the League of the South as well. And he got an opportunity to give me a full report. And so I'm happy to tell you that he's let me know that no one was arrested or injured. The media got an opportunity to give our message out regionally and nationally where we're opposing infanticide and doing so more forthrightly and more courageously than the Rally for Life people who demonstrated only that they are not willing to face baby killers head on in the streets as they'll have to be faced inevitably. They're not willing to really oppose what they call evil face to face. They would prefer to slink off inside and hide and let other people do their fighting for them. And so that's what happened today. And it was a great success in Knoxville. And I want to thank everyone who was involved. So this was another good day for the white nationalist movement and the alt-right. Those of you who are still alt-right are moving rightwards, becoming more radicalized through the radical flank effect, hopefully of programs like the Roper Report. And you're recognizing that purity spiraling is a necessary growing pain for the movement and yourself to go to. Now, there haven't been a lot of other demonstrations so far this year, since we're not yet into the second month. We're still in, you know, the end of January. So hopefully, as we continue to report to you the plans for the Nationalist Front and the TWP and the League of the South and the Chilliwack Network and other white nationalist groups, we'll have more and more news of these rallies are planned in the next couple of months, especially as springtime starts. But I can tell you that I've received confirmation that there's going to be a large rally coming up in the very near future here in Arkansas, and it will be probably the largest white nationalist rally that Arkansas has seen in a number of years. And of course, we will be very, very intimately involved in the planning and coordination and participation of that rally here in Arkansas. But more details of that in coming weeks. Stay tuned, same bat time, same bat channel later. This rally in Knoxville today was a follow-up to the Chilliwack Network Phalanx Tactical Training Session, which we held yesterday in Central Arkansas. And that was very well attended. We had an NCO, actually a U.S. Army veteran, a sergeant, who drilled the new recruits in small unit formation and marching about face, forward, right flank, left flank, and at ease, parade, rest, all the basic commands that would also be used in movement. So they practiced drilling and marching, and they really began to develop the kind of unit cohesion as a small unit that would be necessary for any of these future rallies to be successful, whether or not they are allowed to use their shields or not. And we see this tactic where the police are not allowing Kevlar helmets or body vest or even tactical shields to be carried into rally areas. And even in states where shields and helmets and Kevlar are legal, they're still saying, well, if you want to come into this protected rally area, then you're going to have to follow these rules and go through a metal detector and empty out your pockets and take off your helmets and put your shields up and take off your Kevlar vest, when in reality, the law does not stipulate you have to do that. It's temporary, focal, local martial law for an event with really arbitrary rules that the police set up. What's going to happen one of these days is that a flash mob is going to hold a protest from our side without bothering to get a permit, and they'll just have to deal with it. We'll be well within our legal rights to do so. We still have the right to freedom of speech and freedom of peaceable assembly. And shields and helmets and Kevlar vests are not illegal in any state that we'll be holding a protest in. What may also happen is that we may go into a rally area and approach the place where we're going to be holding the protest. The police will have, as they did in Memphis, perhaps barricaded off four city blocks with dump trucks and hundreds of police officers. And they may tell us as we go in there that we're facing opposition, that Black Lives Matter or Antifa are there, ready to combat with us, masked up, throwing items, wanting to fight, attacking us. And the police may say that we have to take off our helmets and put down our shields in order to enter the rally area. And we may simply tell them, no, screw your rally area. We're going to be outside your rally area. We're going to be half a block over. Wherever you put up a petition, we're going to be exactly on the other side of that, mixing it up with them. So you have the option now, police, to let us in with our legal shields and our legal helmets and our legal Kevlar into the rally area, and then you'll at least know where we are, because that's what you really want to control the situation. Or you can try to take our helmets and shields away from us in order to enter the rally area, and that just means that we will not enter your rally area. We will not choose to be confined there. We will go where we want to go and do what we want to do legally, and then you will have no control over the fluid situation. You will not have it contained as you so desperately wish to. Charlottesville Part 2, if that's what you want. And we'll give them that choice perhaps at some point. Today, in Knoxville, I believe that Heimbach made the correct choice to leave the shields and helmets behind and to enter the rally area, and things went well. There were some Antifa there, but they were so small and weak, pitiful looking. They're really a miserable bunch of scoundrels that, you know, obviously, if the law enforcement had not been there, they would have just mopped the floor with the Antifa. There was no doubt about it. And that's always the case. You know, the law enforcement don't show up to protect us. They always are protecting the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter because we are the conquerors. We are the victors. We are the ones who brought civilization to this continent, who created this nation, and we have always conquered every other race and every other people. We're not going to be defeated by any non-whites or by any Jews or by any renegade liberal race traitors who happen to be standing on the side. So the law enforcement and the Antifa both know that they are there to protect the other side from us. No, certainly not the other way around. And today, they did their jobs, but the Antifa really were kept in one little corner, and they're pretty pathetic looking, pretty miserable, to be honest with you. So as things develop over the end of the winter, as we warm up a little bit and get closer to spring, there'll be a lot more announcements of future demonstrations and protests and rallies that I will share with you here on the Roper Report and on the Roper Report website, Billy's Balkanization blog, which you can find out more about by going to whitenationalists.com. That's W-H-I-T-E. NATIONALISTS.com, whitenationalists.com, or the Shield Wall Network website if you'd like to learn more about how you can get involved in the White Nationalist Preppers Group, which also is an activist, boots-on-the-ground protesting and demonstrating organization, the Shieldwall Network Phalanx, by going to the Shieldwall Network website at ArianWarrior.com. That's ArianWarrior.com. So as you go to ArianWarrior.com or WhiteNationalist.com, I encourage you to read the articles to learn how you can become a person of influence in your community, and especially about the Shieldwall Network plan, what we call Project New America. And it reflects what I wrote about in my most popular and best-selling nonfiction book, The Balk. The Balkanization of America and the voluntary remigration of whites and blacks and Hispanics who are self-segregating, who are moving away from one another and establishing increasingly separate ethnic enclaves, which are growing to be, in the future, ethno-states. And we'll talk about that here in just a moment. But first, I need to discuss an issue that I've touched on through social media, but have not written about for the Roper Report website, because I didn't really want to waste time on the issue. I have tackled the alt-right before, leading up to Charlottesville. I spent a couple of months detailing my issues with the character and integrity of a lot of the characters in the alt-right, especially, you know, people, for example, who are multimillionaires, who have a net worth of $185 million, whose mommies own thousands of acres of cotton plantation land in the Deep South, and who have multiple homes, and who have never had to really work in their lives. They certainly can't understand what it's like to be a working class white man. And these multimillionaires who are really in it as some kind of e-celebrity striving that they think will get them some kind of, yeah, immortality and glamour. They hold these rallies and protest and Big Ten affairs where they want to be the celebrities and the rock stars. And then when they go south, when people get arrested at their protest, instead of taking any responsibility, instead of stepping up to bat and helping with bail or helping with the commissary or canteen expenses or paying for any lawyers, they actually don't give a single red cent or say a word about the guys who are left behind in jail because they went to their protests and rallies. So I've spent a lot of time on this issue, and I don't want to belabor the point or use up my bandwidth on the Roper Report website writing about people like Richard Spencer. But this last week, his snafus have really risen to the surface. So once again, he's been headline news in the alt-right and the white nationalist movement because of some comments that he's made, which were exceedingly controversial. And if you have not seen the video, well, suffice to say that he and another of his acolytes are having a discussion about pedophiles. And Spencer actually makes the case that pedophiles would not molest children if they were allowed access to child porn as a venting of their unnatural desires. And obviously, anyone who knows anything about the psychology of that kind of behavior knows that that kind of material, exposure to it, only whets the appetite. It only increases the desire for more and more strange and twisted and aberrant material of the type, leading inevitably to more and more twisted minds. It liberates people from their natural inhibitions, if they have any left, and destroys those inhibitions so that they want to constantly get a worse and worse, more twisted and disgusting and perverted thrill or kick. So it actually makes the situation worse. It does not, you know, human psychology is not like a steam pressure release valve where you can vent a desire or an impulse, whether it's healthy or unhealthy. Exposure to those things only make a person more and more sick. They never help the situation. But Spencer is really not anything more than a racist liberal. He is a libertarian or a liberal with a strong Duganist and even Stalinist influence, but he is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the holder of any kind of traditional moral values. And that was proven long ago when he buddied up with Jack Donovan, the open homosexual who he invited to speak at his MPI conference a couple years ago and had write for his altright.com website, and then defended and actually banned people from attending if they didn't like it, and then had the gall to say that homosexuality was the implicit last, or the last bastion of implicit whiteness, was how he phrased it. And then he also defends self-admitted Jews like Mike Enoch Pinovich and his Jewish wife. He's really, you know, pretty degenerate. But that's what Spencer did this week. And a lot of you may not have heard about it, but, you know, I'm not going to go on a crusade against the guy. Anyone who is really still following Richard Spencer at this point, the couple dozen IE guys that are on his coattails or whatever, you know, I hope that some of them will eventually radicalize rightwards, and as their Overton window is shifted through the Hegelian dialectic, eventually they will know better. You know, being a millionaire can only take you so far, and your money can only buy so many friends and so much loyalty, regardless of how many venues you can pay for and how many salaries you can pay. That's about how many friends he's going to have left. But ultimately, we have to reject this kind of degeneracy. We have to reject this kind of big tent, perverted openness to the point where, you know, literally homosexuals and literally pedophiles are being made excuses for and apologized for and defended. We cannot tolerate that in the white nationalist movement. And hopefully those of you who are regular listeners to the Roper Report agree with me on that point. I don't think it's at all a controversial one. I don't think it's at all a fringe one. I think that most of us, the vast majority, hopefully of us, would agree that there is no place in white nationalism and no place in the future white ethnostate for homosexuals, and certainly not for pedophiles, regardless of what they watch or listen to. But that having been said, you know, the predilection for Asian girls, which Richard Spencer shares with Andrew Anglin, may have led to Anglin then writing an article defending Spencer's statement and kind of, you know, laughing it off. But reality is the rest of us all know better. Now, speaking of Jews, the Senate Minority Leader, Charles Schumer, the Jewish senator, actually is crowing about the government shutdown, which we're now going through, which, I mean, who really is upset about a government shutdown? Now, I'm not. I wish the government would shut down and never open up again. The United States government is our biggest enemy. It's the biggest hindrance to us having control of our destiny again. The only people who need the government, who want the government, who are upset about the government shutting down are people who need government welfare to survive and who can't exist without a big government nanny state socialism to take care of them. And that's mainly non-whites or low-quality whites, whom we don't need anyway. So while we are going to see some kind of compromise, which will almost inevitably also include DACA, the Delayed Child Immigrant Prosecution Bill, you know, that was actually an executive order that was put into place by Obama, probably illegally, saying that, well, no one knows how many. Is it 700,000? Is it 800,000? Is it 1 million? Well, 1.5 million, 2 million. I've seen some estimates as high as 3.5 million of illegal immigrants who were brought here as children, as minors, against their will or without their consent by their parents, who are now largely adults. And some of them have children of their own, but they're still illegal immigrants. Even though they've been here for decades, they've never bothered to apply for citizenship. They've always lived here illegally as invaders. These DACA dreamers would actually be given a pathway to citizenship. And that would then, as I'm going to tell you about in a minute, flip a lot of red states to blue. Because it's not just 700,000, it's literally probably 3 to 3.5 million. And in between now and then, while that's being done, more and more of them are going to be brought in by their parents to get in under the wire, under the radar, so to speak. So this DACA thing, you know, it's smoke and mirrors, but in the long term, it is kind of important. And let me take just a second to explain why. Try to follow me on this, okay? The government shutdown is all a farce. You know, Mitch McConnell, Republican, definitely could end this anytime he wanted to without cucking to the Democrats. Very simple. Here's how it works. For those of you who don't understand how the United States Congress works, the idea that there's a government shutdown because there's 51 Republicans and 49 Democrats is just BS. It has nothing to do with reality because you don't really have to have 60 votes to pass a budget or to pass a bill. It doesn't require that 60 majority because that's not part of the Constitution that says you have to have 60. That's just a Senate rule. It's only a Senate rule, rule number 10, that you have to have 60 to pass it. Why? Because, well, the Senate makes their own rules. Now, the Senate could vote to change that rule so that it doesn't have to require 60 to break what's really a fake filibuster. Call it a fake-a-buster, right? It's the fake-a-buster 60% majority. Now, how could the Senate vote to change that rule and not require 60? Just by voting on it. Well, would it require 60 votes to change the rule? No. In order to change the Senate rule, check this out, follow me here. In order to change the Senate rule, which requires 60 votes to pass the bill, it only requires 51 votes, a simple majority, 51 out of the 100 senators. Guess how many Republicans there are in the Senate? 51. So without a single Democrat vote, the Republicans could change the Senate rule, and instead of requiring 60 votes to pass, they could do it with the 51 that they have. Look it up. So this is one of the benefits that you get, friends, from having a radio host who was a former political science teacher, right? It's all smoke and mirrors, all a bunch of BS. The Republicans could very easily change their own Senate rules and end the government shutdown anytime they wanted to. But it's Tweedledum and Tweedledum are both parties working together for the establishment elite. There's no difference between them. The D and the R, the donkey and the elephant. It's all the same. And so they're playing this game to trick people and think, oh my gosh, there's a government shutdown. First of all, the government shutdown would not even start until tomorrow, until Monday. So the panic is kind of hyperbolic. And even when it does, no essential government personnel would even be laid off at all. Everything would continue to go pretty much as always. Now, they're going to have a stopgap spending bill that's going to be passed after the Republicans pretend to cave in and cooperate and negotiate and make a deal that's going to not include a border wall. Notice even Trump's not talking about a wall. Oh, it's not really a wall. It's border security, which might include, you know, repairing a fence or hiring some more guards. Trump guys, there is never going to be a wall until we build it ourselves after America goes down. Get that through your GOP skulls. I'm sorry to say, once again, I told you so. Trump's not one of us. He's not our guy. There's never going to be a wall until we build it ourselves after America goes down. So, even the Republicans are not really talking about a wall. They're talking about enhanced border security, right? They're going to hire a few more Mexicans to guard the border with Mexico, which is, you know, like hiring a fox to guard the hen house, obviously. So Pablo can let his second and third cousins in because his first cousins are all already here. It's really what's going to happen because he's now going to be officially hired by Trump to be a border security guard. Si, senor. So that's what's going to happen. No wall, no real border security. They're going to give citizenship to these DACA dreamers. Deferred action for criminal illegal aliens is what DACA is supposed to mean. Now it means that they're dreamers and they're just here to achieve the same dreams that all of us have come for. Well, no, not really, because our ancestors came to a country that was nothing more than wilderness and carved out of that wilderness, populated by nothing but merciless Stone Age savages, the greatest country in the world for a while, gave it a shot, and now their descendants lack the will to hold it. so it's got to fall apart. Because what cannot fly must fall, and what is falling, we should still push and say, fall faster. So the result of legalizing these, I guess, 3.5 million dreamers is going to be really not felt in 2020. 2020 is when you have the next census. You're going to have a midterm election this year. It's probably not going to change a lot, except that red states are going to become redder and blue states are going to become bluer. The growth of this resist movement and our own counter-protest against it, where everyone has their own echo chambers online and social media, and they only talk about politics with their own friends, and there's no real civil discourse anymore because the token civic nationalism that used to supposedly bind us together with these Big Ten ideas like the national anthem, that's now racist too, right? They, Wednesday, threw pink paint all over a statue to Francis Scott Key because the national anthem is racist, don't you know? Well, so be it. So civic nationalism is dead. The token unifiers, those symbols that are supposed to have united us, well, they're dead too. Forget about it. Bury them. That means that we're going more and more polarized and divided every day, headed towards balkanization. And Congress is the same, because in order to be elected and, more importantly, reelected, Congress critters like to try to reflect the views of their constituents. So they will wet their finger and stick it up in the air, try to see which way the wind is blowing. And as blue states become bluer, now this is also, like I wrote, partially the effect of voluntary internal migration as white people flee diverse non-white areas and move to white areas. And blacks move from Midwestern state large cities and Northeastern large cities back to the Deep South. Whites respond in the Deep South by moving to the Upper South. Hispanics take over the Southwest and whites move out of there to the West. You see these ethnostates emerging and coalescing and congealing. And that means that every congressional district and every state with their senatorial representatives actually becomes more and more polarized. Red states becoming deeper red, blue states darker blue. The balkanized Congress then will really mean that in 2020, when that census is taken and they reapportion congressional seats, there'll be a rise of sectionalism and regionalism, like in the 1850s, like in 1856 when, you know, Sumner did his job on the House floor. This will really result in regional alliances of states neighboring one another with similar economic and political interests. And those regional alliances or confederations, if they're economic or cultural, whatever they are originally, of these states and regions will result in those becoming ethnostates as well. So, you know, once again, to recap, DACA is about 3.6 million instead of 700,000. There'll be a lot of states turning blue, like Florida and Texas and Georgia and Arizona and others, which means that if you count their electoral college votes, it's really going to be impossible to ever elect, you know, a conservative white president again. It'll be the end of rule of this nation by the people who founded it. Just as a result of how the DACA dreamers being legalized into citizenship and counted in the 2020 census coming up will reflect on the Electoral College in that election. Now, after that 2020 census and they're counted, the reapportionment of the Electoral College votes and the House seats, hopefully more and more of you will come to realize that Billy's been right for a long time as he's been telling you that we're not going to be able to vote our way out of this mess, people. It's way, way too late for that. And a lot of people are noticing that, you know, secession is really no longer a dirty word. Last year this time, just last year, when people talked about Cal exit and California seceding, everyone was really butthurt about the idea. It seemed impossible. Well, here's a more palatable step along the way. You know, we have a North Carolina and a South Carolina. We have a North Dakota and a South Dakota. We have a lot of states which came out of larger states after they balkanized, after they split apart. Most obvious example that many of you may know from history is West Virginia came out of Virginia during the Civil War. Now, there's this new thing you may have heard about where the non-coastal regions of California want to secede from the state of California and remain in the Union, they say, but actually be the 51st state of New California. If you look at the map, it's pretty funny. The most liberal areas are being left behind in old California, and the most productive areas, unless you're counting Hollywood production, would be in New California. The problem is they do have some of the Bay Area, so they're going to be pretty paused, but for the most part, New California would be less liberal than old California if that secession and division of the state were to happen. But more interestingly, once again, you have to think about, we're still in geopolitical terms, right? The Electoral College, California has more Electoral College votes than any other state. It also has a larger population than the other state. But their electoral votes then would be split so that one state would not really be able to decide the presidential elections for the other 49. So from my perspective, even though I don't see any salvation in the electoral process, it would be funny as heck if California were to split and New California were to emerge as a new state right before the Titanic hits the iceberg. And that's all it is, rearranging the deck chairs here and arguing about the menu prices on the Titanic's deck. But still kind of funny to watch people wanting to accept balkanization inside the United States as a step towards accepting it away from the United States, inevitably. So don't worry about the government shutdown. Don't worry about New California secession. You know, sit back on your lounge chair and watch that big hunk of ice coming at us. All hands on deck. It's going to go down. Along the way, we might expect to lose more of our rights, kind of like Canada has, maybe not so much as Germany has. And some of you have been following on the Roper Report website my continuing reports and updates about Monica Schaefer. She is a Canadian citizen who is currently incarcerated in Germany for asking some uncomfortable questions about the supposed Holocaust. The prosecutor, who sent her to jail, even though she was a Canadian citizen, actually told her that if she wanted to have free speech, then she should have stayed in Canada. Well, probably Canada shouldn't be upheld as a shining beacon of freedom of speech, certainly not in comparison to ours, which is much diminished from what it was just 2 seconds ago. But there are shades of gray. There are some diminishing rights in the United States, which have already diminished in Canada and which are completely gone in Germany. So I encourage you to go to the Roper Report website. Once again, that's whitenationalist.com, and look up some of the articles that we have published there about the plight of Monica Schaefer, the Canadian citizen who has been arrested for hate speech violations in Germany. And you can write to her, and also encouraging her, but you can write to and contact the German consulate to let them know that they're not going to be allowed to just lock her away and throw away the key without the world watching. Another free speech advocate who is being punished now is the New Albion leader, Tom Kaczynski, who is a friend of mine and an advocate for white cultural interest and white heritage. He is the city manager of a small town, Jackport, Maine. And he's come under fire from the controlled media in the state and nationally lately because of his expression of his political views, which some find politically incorrect. His views, for example, that Islam is not really a healthy additive to Western culture and civilization. And his views, which are shared by many, that ultimately we need to preserve our heritage and our culture, the people who founded this nation. Now, New Albion, as I've written about before on the Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization blog websites, and I've also discussed actually here on the Roper Report podcast, is an actively growing effort to establish a white ethnostate in the upper New England corner of our country. And just like Ozarkia, here straddling the Arkansas-Missouri border in southern Missouri and north Arkansas, where we have over 40 contiguous counties that are over 95% white and growing more and more white every day as racially conscious whites move from Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama to North Arkansas and Southern Missouri. And just like in the far west, in Montana, you have the Kalispell PLE. And just like in the northwestern states, in that corner, you have a lot of people who follow the Northwest Imperative and who believe that will be a white ethno-state. New Albion is actually a viable alternative for white people, especially in the New England states. Now, Tom Kaczynski, and I want to spell his name to make sure I'm not mispronouncing it. It's Kaczynski, has been very stalwart and courageous in facing the attacks of the controlled media and Antifa and anti-whites in New England, who have worked really hard over the last few days to get him fired from his job as the town manager of Jackman. And, you know, Jackman's a very small town in Maine, less than 1,000 people, but he's been working really hard to improve the lives of his fellow citizens through creating jobs and protecting the environment and promoting local culture and heritage. And, of course, that's a crime when that heritage and culture is white heritage and culture, as far as the liberals are concerned. But he has not, unlike far too many public figures who are, you know, intimidated into renouncing their rights and freedoms by vicious liberal attacks, Mr. Kaczynski has decided not to recant or apologize for his traditional values or his expressed disapproval of the attempt to force Muslim Sharia law and other anti-Western influences on his community. He made a very bold statement on Gab, which you can read by going to the Rope Report and reading the new article, New Albion Under Attack. But I encourage you to do more than that. I encourage you to reach out to Mr. Kaczynski and express your support for his courageous stand for our people and for his community and for the growing potential ethno-state of New Albion. And you can do that by going to the New Albion website and reading more about it, especially if you're in the northeast corner of the country, by going to newalbion.org. That's newalbion.org. newalbion.org. New Albion, for those of you who are in the northeast. So we certainly wish the best to Tom, to his family, and to his friends and supporters there in the emerging white ethno-state of New Albion, in the northeastern part of the current United States of America. He is a friend of ours, a friend of the Rope Report, and we encourage all of you to support him during this time. We've all been there, and certainly we hope that it comes out well for him, but however it turns out, the most important thing is his courageous stand, which he is not being cucked in. So congratulations, Tom, on your stalwart defense of free speech and our people. We're here with you all the way. Now, another thing we need to talk about is this killer flu, and I wrote extensively about it last week, but in the time that I've written about this flu, my mother and my wife and our kid have contracted it. A lot of people, dozens, have died from type B, which is also the Australian type of this flu, which is really burning through the United States. It's already burned through the UK and New Zealand and Australia and other parts of the world. Similar to the 1919 Spanish influenza, which, you know, there's a national forest wilderness area here in the Ozarks, a little bit from here, that formerly was private property and was owned by my great-great-grandfather. And there is a family cemetery deep in the woods that very few people know about. It still exists. But there are a couple dozen headstones there in the middle of these woods. And they are, about half of them, the graves of my great-great-aunts and uncles who died when they were children in 1918 and 1919 due to the Spanish influenza, which was brought back to the States by returning soldiers coming home from World War I and actually killed about as many people or more than World War I itself. Horrible thing. Now, 100 years later, we're facing another epidemic, and it hopefully will not reach that horrific of a stage of growth or that level of infection. And because of modern medical technology, the mortality rate, we hope, will be lower. But I can tell you that it has a lot of people frightened around here, as if it were almost a zombie apocalypse. People are wearing face masks, they're shutting down schools, they're shutting down workplaces, they're not going out in public, and a lot of times those who have contracted the flu are abandoned by their friends and family to tough it out on their own. So we've been dealing with the flu in my own family. Just about everyone has it here at different stages. And so I want to thank you all for your prayers and your thoughts of support during this time. And if you hear some coughing in the background, it's because our kiddo is still suffering from it. And I'm certainly not going to exile him to his room while he is going through the flu. So please bear with us in that. And we hope that wherever you are, wherever you're listening to the Roper Report, that you and your family are healthy and safe. And we encourage you to go to the Roper Report and to read some of the suggestions of how to avoid the flu under that article. And then also how you can treat yourself. And what is the most effective method of surviving the flu if you do contract it? And that is on the Roper Report website under the title Killer Flu. And I don't believe that that is too wide of an exaggeration. It's actually pretty spot on. It is definitely a killer flu. I want to remind everyone that hopefully we'll be all healthy and hale in time for the February the 17th Shield Wall Network meeting here in North Central Arkansas. If you'd like to find out more about the February the 17th Shield Wall Network meeting, I encourage you to email me at roper_billy@yahoo.com. It will be a family-friendly event, and it will coincide with another Shield Wall Phalanx training exercise. Also, the Shield Wall Phalanx will be holding monthly training exercises regionally throughout the state and in adjoining states next to Arkansas. We divided up the state and our adjoining states into different regions, appointed regional coordinators to host and to train the local Shield Wall Phalanx members in the small unit tactics that we've been learning. And each month, they'll be building on those skills and honing them so that we'll continue to become a more effective defensive arm for the White Nationalist Movement and for our Shield Wall Network. But being a part of the Shield Wall Network, our White Nationalist Preppers, or being an actual man and standing up to the plate, joining the phalanx and earning your patch, isn't easy. It's not for everyone. But it does require a certain level of commitment for people who do want to get involved. If you think of the analogy of the little red hen, some of you may remember it from being a child, and remember that the little red hen asked who would help her cut the wheat? No one wanted to help her cut the wheat. Who would help her thresh the wheat? No one wanted to help her. Who would help her make the flour? No one wanted to help her make the flour. Who would help her bake the bread? Of course, they're all busy. They had a football game to watch, or beer to drink, or something more entertaining to do on the Xbox. None of them wanted to help the little red hen make the bread, but when the bread was made, they all wanted to eat it, and the little red hen said, "No, you did not help me thresh the wheat. You did not help me make the flour. You did not help me to bake the bread. You're not going to help me eat it either." That's the way the White Nationalist Movement is. It requires a certain level of devotion and commitment to be involved, and especially with the Shield Wall Network being a White Nationalist Preppers movement, it's important that you commit yourselves to the best of your ability, because there is a place for everyone in the Shield Wall Network, where your assets and your resources, your job skills and your training and your experiences can be beneficial to our people now and in the future when stuff hits the fan. So as you listen to the people asking for the FISA memo to be released, and whether we watch to see if the FBI former director Comey is actually going to be prosecuted, or if the DOJ conspiracy under Obama and his orders to wiretap the Trump campaign like Watergate actually comes to fruition, 130 Republican congressmen, I guess I've read the memo already and asked for it to be released, whether actually Clinton, he or she, may be penalized or prosecuted for that because of their campaign's collusion. Well, the House Intelligence Committee has that memo, and if they vote with a simple Republican majority to release it, then the president could authorize that. I don't see why he would not, We may get a chance to find out just how corrupt the Department of Justice and the FBI has been under the Obama administration, and even now, because a lot of those corrupt, anti-white bureaucrats in the deep state are still in power. While we watch all this political drama unfolding, remember that these house of cards that they've erected are going to fall inevitably. America's going down, cannot last very much longer. And that's why it's important that you become a person of influence in your community, that you network and communicate with like-minded people now, before it happens. How many people do you know in real life within 10 miles from you that you could trust with your life and with your family's lives? How many of them are racially conscious? How many friends do you have in real life off the internet that you count on within 100 miles of you, within a tank of gas of you, if there's a grid collapse, if there's an EMP attack, if there's a shutdown of transportation, martial law declared? How many people do you know as friends in real life who are like-minded, who you could call upon to help defend you and your family, to share assets and resources, to stand together to defend your community, to gain influence in it, to control the allocation of resources and assets so that you can control the policies of your community to defend it from hordes of refugees from the burning, looted out cities as the starving zombies overtake the countryside? How many people do you know? Would you like to know more? That's the purpose of the Shield Wall Network. We are a white nationalist preppers collective, and we are also boots on the ground white nationalist activists. We do protest and rallies and demonstrations. Those of us who are in the phalanx, that is, which is only open to men. Sorry, but we defend our women and children and our elderly. We do not take them into combat zones with us. But there are many things that anyone of any age or gender can do to help be a part of the White Nationalist Preppers Collective that we refer to as the Shield Wall Network, as we prepare for the inevitable and prepare to not just survive it, but to conquer, to retake control of our destiny as a people on a local level, in our communities, in our counties, and ultimately in our states and regions, which, as I said before, are coalescing into these emerging ethnostates, however large they may be, however populous they might be, however powerful they may be. They will be ours. They'll be our new white homelands for us, for our people, once again. So if you would like to know more people who think like you do in real life, whom you can trust as friends to stand with you now and in the future when it is needed most, I encourage you to get involved in the Shield Wall Network by going to ArianWarrior.com and reading the articles there about the Shield Wall Network plan, Project New America, and how you can become a person of influence in your community. If you'd like more information, once again, my email address is roper_billy@yahoo.com. So once again, congratulations to the Patriots who stood today in Knoxville. Thank you to the Shield Wall Phalanx Warriors who came out yesterday for our successful training session in Central Arkansas. And I encourage you who are in Arkansas or in a surrounding state who are able to come to our February the 17th meeting in North Central Arkansas. In between now and then, we'll keep you informed as the date gets closer and give you the details. Throughout the winter and spring, I want you to join with us and stand with us as we grow together, arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder with our patriot brothers throughout the white nationalist movement. We know what's coming. You know what's coming. Are you ready for it? Do you think you're going to stand alone? We hope not. We hope that you'll stand with us in the Shield Wall Network. So, until next time, for the Roper Report and the Shield Wall Network, this is Billy Roper, your host as always, reminding you to think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
Can you hear the student band? I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain? We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fireworks are to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry.
Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll set a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
You are listening to Radio Aryan, for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.